So today is the celebration of the appearance day of Shripad Ramanujacharya, the head of the Sri or Lakshmi Sampradaya. So today we're going to speak about him and his philosophy. So Om Ganat Mirandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So just a little philosophy first, if you can listen carefully. Ramanujacharya, as we mentioned, was the head of the Sri Sampradaya, that was Lakshmi Sampradaya, and his manifestation of philosophy was called Vishishta Dvaita, which basically means qualified or purified oneness. You can remember that, and I'll explain what it means. Vishishta means that even though all his energies, Krishna's energies, are one, they're all coming from Krishna, they are variegated too at the same time. That's very similar to our philosophy of Achincha Beda Beda Tattva, that everything is one and simultaneously different, inconceivably. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching. So he also preached oneness and diversity, same as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Actually, the teachings of Ramanujacharya are more similar to the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu than the teachings of Madhvacharya are. Because Madhvacharya taught Dvaita philosophy, just like extreme dualism. You understand that there's the Lord, and then there's everything here in the material world, and it's not connected so much. So there's the other Acharyas was Nimbarka Acharya in the Kumara Sampradaya, who taught Shuddha Advaita, which means purified, purified monism. And Vishnu Swami in the Shiva Sampradaya taught his philosophy. So anyway, so Ramanujacharya wrote during his pastimes the Vedanta Srivasya, the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, Gita commentary, another commentary called the Vedanta Sara, Vedartha Sangraha, and Nitya Granta, and many, many literatures he composed. So now we'll tell the story about Ramanujacharya. So many, many years ago, in the year 908, there was someone named Nata Muni, 908 AD, who compiled the Vedas and the hymns of the Alwars. The Alwars were the poets and the great devotees in Tamil Nadu. They were Tamil poets. Tamil Nadu is a state or a location in India. And so he compiled, and there were many of these Alwars, and some of them were ladies too. They were great, great personalities. And anyone who has gone to Sri Rangam in South India has seen the place where the Alwars would meet. There's a place called the Hall of a Thousand Pillars. You all remember that? Those are devotees who went with me to South India? And many, many pillars there. And so that's where the Alwars would meet and talk about the philosophy of worship of Lord Vishnu. They didn't talk about Krishna so much. In fact, they considered Krishna to be an avatar of Vishnu, but they were great devotees of the Supreme Lord. So this Nata Muni had a son, and his son was Ishwara Muni. And Ishwara Muni was the father of Jamunacharya. And Ishwara Muni died at a very early age when his wife was pregnant, in about 953 A.D. And when this happened, Nata Muni took sannyas because he was very disturbed. He was actually very disturbed by this death. And so then, remember, okay, yeah, that's right. So Ishwara Muni had a son named Jamunacharya, the famous Acharya of South India. And he was a great scholar. And at the age of 12, he defeated the great pandit in the kingdom of Chola in South India. And this is a very interesting story. He challenged the pundit to a debate. And because this pundit actually was very we say pecuniary, he was interested in money. So he, there was a tax that either you would argue with the pundit or you pay your taxes. And they tried to tax Jamunacharya's guru. And that's why Jamunacharya wanted to argue with the pundit. Everyone follows that so far? So Jamunacharya, he went to the pundit and he challenged the pundit. And the queen of Chola was so much enamored with Jamunacharya that she said, I think he's going to win. And the king said, there's no way he's going to win. Because this is my court pundit. You know, he's a little boy at 12 years old. How is he going to win against this big Maha pundit? So the queen took a wager. That means made a bet with the king. And she said, if you win, I'll become your servant or slave. And so the king was very enthusiastic. Oh, my wife will become my slave. And if I win, the queen said, you're going to give half your kingdom to Jamunacharya. So the king was very enthusiastic. He was thinking, Jamunacharya will never win. And actually, I want my wife to become my slave because I need more rotis. Anyway, so therefore, Jamunacharya said to the pundit, he challenged the pundit, and he says, okay, if you can defeat these three propositions, then you'll win, or any one of the three propositions. So the three propositions he presented to the pundit was, one, the proposition was, your mother is not barren. You understand? So your mother is not barren. So if he were to defeat that, he would say the mother is not his mother. He would say, have to say his mother is barren. Barren means a lady who never had a child. So the second thing he told the pundit to defeat was the statement, the king is righteous. So in order to defeat that, the pundit would have to prove the king is unrighteous, which would be a disaster for him, an offense to the king. And the third one was the queen is chaste. So in order to defeat that, he'd have to prove the queen is unchaste. So in other words, the pundit, he was just like bewildered. He said, these statements cannot be defeated. So Jamunacharya said, I'll defeat them, and you'll admit defeat when I defeat these statements. First of all, your mother is not barren. So he had to prove that the pundit's mother was barren. And so he brought out a statement from the Vedic literature that states that if a woman only has one son, she's considered barren. So the pundit was amazed. All right, let's see the second one. So the second one was, the king is righteous. And the pundit said, how are you going to defeat that one? And Jamunacharya said, the king has to assume the karma of all the citizens. Therefore, he gets a lot of bad karma. Therefore, he's unrighteous. And so he was defeated. And then the third one was the hardest. The queen is chaste. So Jamunacharya had to show that the queen was unchaste without offending the queen. So Jamunacharya said that the queen is married to the king, right? And the king is considered the representative of all the demigods. So in essence, she's married to all the demigods. And so that's not nice for a lady to be married to 33 million men. You know, two or three is all right, but 33 million is pretty unchaste. So at that point, Jamunacharya won the half of the kingdom, and he got the name Ala Bhandaru. That means he was conquered. And so Jamunacharya, and remember, later on he was become the great Acharya of the Sri Sampradaya, preceding Ramanujacharya. So, but he became a king, and he became basically enamored with all the opulence of being a king. And so he forgot, basically it was a pastime, but he forgot his mission in life. And then his grandfather, Nathamuni, sent a disciple to preach to Jamunacharya. To Jamunacharya, that's right. And this disciple, his name was Nambi, he couldn't see the king because generally an ordinary man couldn't see the king. So he developed a strategy to be able to come in contact with the king. And that strategy was that every day he would go to the king's kitchen and bring this very nice spinach for the king. And so they would cook for the king. The king got attached to the spinach. And then one day he didn't bring the spinach. And the king said, "Where's my spinach?" And they said, "Well, the guy didn't come." And the king said, "Bring him here." So in that way, this Nambi pulled a trick so that he could see the king. And when he saw the king, what he did is he preached to him. He preached to Jamunacharya that actually this is not your real position. Your position is to renounce and teach Krishna consciousness. So Jamunacharya, hearing that, renounced the kingdom and became the great acharya of the Sri Sampradaya. And this was also in Sri Rangam. So that's Jamunacharya. So it's important we talk about Jamunacharya, who is the predecessor for Ramanujacharya. So then, one of Jamunacharya's chief followers was Sri Saila Purna. And he had two sisters. One was named Bhudevi, and the other one was Sridevi. And Bhudevi was the mother of Ramanujacharya. So they're all related, at least specifically like that. And this lady, Bhudevi, married a man named Keshavacharya in Madras. And in 1017 AD, Ramanujacharya appeared, and he was named Ramanujacharya because he is considered, he was called Rama first, of course, a Ramanuja. The Acharya appellation came later, because he's considered an incarnation of Lakshman. Isn't it? Ramanujacharya. So, Ram's younger brother. He associated very much with the disciples of Jamunacharya. Now, he was in Kanchi. I'll just give a little geography here. Jamunacharya and his followers were in Sri Rangam, and Ramanujacharya, or Ramanuja at that particular time, was born in Kanchipuram. Kanchipuram has the deity, the famous deity named Varada Dharaja, which means the deity who fulfills everyone's desire. And we also went to see that deity. Do you remember that? Varada Dharaja in Kanchi. So that's the deity. The original deity they actually keep in the water. Do you remember the story? In the lake there. And because he's a wooden deity, so they only take him out every like 11 or 14 years. But there's a Utsava Murti, several of them in that temple, one in the bottom floor and one in the top floor. And when we went there with the devotees, some of the devotees were from here, we had a kirtan in that temple. Remember, we chanted a static kirtan upstairs in the temple. Okay. So, Ramanujacharya married at 16 years of age. His father died. And he accepted a guru by the name of Yadava Prakash. And Yadava Prakash was an impersonalist. Impersonalist means he thinks that, basically, the Brahman effulgence is superior to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one time, Ramanujacharya was massaging his guru, the back of his guru, and the guru was quoting from the Chandogya Upanishad about the eyes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he said, the eyes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is what Ramanujacharya's guru, Yadava Prakash, said, are reddish, like the I hate to mention this, like the tail portion of a monkey. The ass of a monkey. And Ramanujacharya, when he heard this example, because this example was given by Sripad Shankaracharya, then he got so upset he started to cry. The tears were pouring down from his eyes, and those tears hit the back of his spiritual master. And so the spiritual master said, "Why are you crying?" And basically Ramanujacharya said, "Because you're making a mistake. You don't know what is actually there. You know, the interpretation of that verse." He said, "The real interpretation of that verse is that the Lord's eyes are reddish like a lotus flower." Because he was able to analyze the Sanskrit. So then the guru got really upset. I mean, it's really not so nice the disciple starts instructing the guru. And then another time he defeated the guru. The guru said that Brahman, the supreme Brahman, Vishnu, becomes covered by Maya. And Ramanujacharya just really soundly defeated him. The guru said, that's enough for this disciple. Let's kill him. So Ramanujacharya's guru decided to kill Ramanujacharya, but he had a fancy way of doing it. He thought, we will take a school excursion with all my disciples and we'll go to the Ganges. The Ganges was in the far north of India. Because remember, they're in South India, in the state of Tamil Nadu, so north. So let's go on an excursion. Of course, that excursion would take several months. We'll kill Ramanujacharya when we get to the Ganges. And then, after we kill him, we'll just bathe in the Ganges. And when you bathe in the Ganges, guess what happens? You get all the sins go away. Just like we chant every morning, Yani Kani Chapapani, Ramaha Chari Kani Chap. That when you circumambulate Tulsi Devi, what happens? You become free from the sin, even of killing a Brahmin. So if you have to kill someone, you should just circumambulate Tulsi Devi. It doesn't work like that, I'll tell you that. Because if you do it deliberately, you don't become free from that sin. It doesn't work. It's like sinning on the strength of chanting the holy names of the Lord. So they plan to kill Ramanujacharya. But Ramanujacharya was informed by his cousin Govinda, and he escaped. And he escaped in the middle of the night. He escaped from all the way in North India. Remember, you're talking about 1,000 miles or even more between the Ganges and Kanchipuram. And so what happened is that he was a young boy. He was only 16 or 17 years old. And he was wandering through the forest. He met this couple of hunters. You know, there's a man and a woman. They were a hunter family. And they took care of him for one night. And the next night he woke up back in Kanchipuram. It was like a miracle. Like he was transported. Did you understand what I'm talking about? Transported, like miraculously, back to Kanchipuram. It turned out that hunter couple was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, and his wife Lakshmi. So they were taking care, watching out for Ramanujacharya. So even after his guru came back with all the disciples, they were shocked to see Ramanujacharya. It was like seeing a ghost. They thought he had been lost or killed or something like that. He continued to associate with his guru. So merciful. So then one thing happened that really aggravated his guru even more is that the king of Kanchi had a daughter that was haunted by a Brahma Rakshasa ghost. So, you know, ghosts are bad enough, but when a ghost is a Brahmin, you may ask, how can a ghost be a Brahmin? Well, if a Brahmin takes kava or any type of intoxication, he becomes a ghost in his next life. Did you know that? If a Brahmin doesn't fulfill his duties of being or a Brahmin eats meat, then the result becomes a ghost. It becomes a powerful ghost. So, Mr. Sharma ghost. Anyway, so he becomes a ghost. He becomes a ghost in his next life. And so this ghost was haunting the princess, the daughter of the king of Kanchi. And so they called for Yadavar Prakash, that is Ramanujacharya's spiritual master, to cure, to get rid of the ghost. And he came and he did his mantras, you know, Om, Ham Brahmasmi, Ham Brahmasmi, or whatever mantra he did. And the ghost, speaking through the girl, just laughed at him. That's very embarrassing. You'll never get rid of me. And the ghost actually said, the only way I will leave her body is if Ramanujacharya puts his lotus feet on her head. And so the guru was really insulted. So Ramanujacharya got rid of the ghost. And the guru was just like really fuming. Later on, Yadava Prakash, the guru of Ramanujacharya, who tried to kill him and was angry with Ramanujacharya, surrendered to Ramanujacharya and became his disciple. Because Yadava Prakash was told by his mother, see, mothers know best, was told by his mother, this you should surrender to your disciple. Similar thing happened to Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya had a guru, and also his guru surrendered to him. So Ramanujacharya's guru, Yadavrakash, bowed down to his disciple's feet and said, please accept me as a disciple. Pretty interesting. I won't do that to any of my disciples. So that would be a disaster. So then what happened is that Ramanujacharya kept preaching Krishna consciousness in Srirangam. But he was married to a wife who was really against Krishna consciousness. Or she was interested in the Brahminical, ritualistic, let's say, caste system. She was a Brahmin family. Ramanujacharya was born in a Brahmin family. And she was just like looking down at everybody else, thinking she was so great. But what happened is Ramanujacharya accepted as one of his Shiksha gurus a person named Kanchipurna, who was there, who was from a lower class family. And so Ramanujacharya's wife didn't like that at all. She really hated that. One time Ramanujacharya invited his guru to prasadam. So his guru came early to the house, and Ramanujacharya's wife served him prasadam, but afterwards she gave all the remnants to the dogs or something, cleaned everything up with cow manure, and Ramanujacharya came back and he said, you know, where's my guru? And she said, he came and ate prasadam already. And he said, where's the Mahaprasadam? And she said, I threw it out, gave it to the dogs. We're not going to eat the remnants of that person. And Ramanujacharya got really angry at his wife. And other things happened later on. One other thing that happened later on was that Ramanujacharya's wife was taking water from a well. In those days, they didn't have like running water in the houses. So she was pulling water from the well, and Kanchipurna, who was Ramanujacharya's Siksha guru at that point, Kanchipurna's wife was also taking water from the well, and some of her water fell into the water of Ramanujacharya's wife, and Ramanujacharya's wife just threw her water away, saying, now my water is contaminated. And so Kanchipurna's wife got very upset and was crying, and this was related to Ramanujacharya. So this really instilled in Ramanujacharya the desire to take sannyas. Just like Srila Prabhupada, when Srila Prabhupada was preaching, his wife would do so many things, like interfere with his preaching. We mentioned this the other day, that throw dust in guests' faces with a feather duster. And also she sold Prabhupada's books, and also Prabhupada told her to stop taking tea, and she said, I prefer to have tea rather than you, Prabhupada, or Abai. And, you know, Prabhupada just like, he basically left in the middle of the night. And so a similar thing happened with Ramanujacharya. We'll tell that story in a second. But first is an interaction with Yamunacharya. So Yamunacharya, remember we were talking about Yamunacharya, was situated in Srirangam. And Yamunacharya wanted to see Ramanujacharya before he passed away. So Yamunacharya sent for Ramanujacharya, please come and see me, and we'll talk. But by the time Ramanujacharya came to Srirangam from Kanchi, because it takes some time, Yamunacharya had passed away. But when he passed away, he just passed away a few moments, basically, before Ramanujacharya came. He had his three fingers like this, clenched in his hand. And Ramanujacharya, when he saw the transcendental body of Yamunacharya, he said, is this normal? Did he always have three fingers clenched? And the disciples of Yamunacharya said, no, we don't know what it means. And Ramanujacharya said, I know what it means. First of all, the three unfulfilled missions of Yamunacharya. One is to teach the people in general about Krishna consciousness. Two is to write a Vedanta commentary, and the third is to name one disciple after Parashara Muni. And as Ramanujacharya said these things, the three fingers on Yamunacharya opened. As he said, each one was just like, shh, shh, shh. And therefore, the disciples of Yamunacharya understood that he was supposed to be the next Acharya. This was a sign from Krishna that he was supposed to be the next Acharya. So, Ramanujacharya was thinking, I can't leave my family. You know, I have to stay here in Kanchi. I can't go to Sri Ranga. But then these things happened with Ramanujacharya's wife, which I mentioned earlier, like the water in the well and the food remnants of the guru being thrown to the dogs. And so Ramanujacharya was thinking, you know, I got to leave. So what he did is he wrote a note to his wife, but signed it with his wife's father's name. Follow what I'm saying so far? And he said that we have a marriage you have to come to. Your sister's getting married. So go immediately and come to our village. So that message was delivered. Ramanujacharya had it delivered by a Brahmin. Hired a Brahmin. So he had that message delivered, and then Ramanujacharya came home and said to his wife, you know, what's up? And he knew what was up. And the wife said, I have to go to this marriage of my sister. And Ramanujacharya said, okay, you can go and I'll follow you a little later. So she left town to go to the marriage of her sister, she thought. But in the meantime, Ramanujacharya took sannyas. When the wife's away, the husband will play. Anyway, so no one should imitate this. You know, there's special personalities. Not that anyone should do this sort of thing. So Ramanujacharya took sannyas, and his he got the name Yati Raj, which means the king of the sannyasis. Yati Raj was a sannyas name. And his first disciple was his cousin, Dasarathi, and his second disciple was named Kuresh, who had a photographic memory. So he actually took dictation from Ramanujacharya because he could remember everything Ramanujacharya said. He was able to write it down later on. And so also we mentioned that Yadava Prakash was converted because of his mother's insistence. Then Ramanujacharya left Kanchipurna and Virata Dharaja, the deity there, and went to Sri Rangam, and he studied under one of the disciples of Yamunacharya named Mahapurna. Then he was sent by Mahapurna to take a very special mantra that would liberate anybody who heard it from another disciple of Yamunacharya who was named Goshtipurna. Is everyone following the story so far? So he went to Goshtipurna to learn the mantra. And Goshtipurna said, no, I'm not ready to teach you the mantra. And he begged many times. And Goshtipurna said to him, all right, I'll teach you this mantra, but you cannot teach this mantra to anyone else because anybody who hears it gets liberated. It's a secret mantra. So keep it secret. That's my order, the order of the guru, secret mantra. So he gave the mantra to Ramanujacharya. And the first thing Ramanujacharya did after he got that mantra was to go to the top of the highest building in the city and say, if anyone wants to get liberated, please listen. And please repeat after me, Om Narayanaya Namaha. Om Narayanaya Namaha. And so he said this mantra. And as we understand, the guru became extremely angry. He said, because you've offended me, don't you understand you're going to hell? And Ramanujacharya replied, that's all right. But I'm willing to go to hell to liberate everybody. And then the guru bowed down at Ramanujacharya's feet and said, actually, you're my guru because you've understood the real purport of the mantra and the real meaning of devotional service. It's a very famous story. So Ramanujacharya also traveled all over India. One time he went to Jagannath Puri and he tried to regulate the deity worship there because the pandas and everybody, they're not as regulated in terms of the Vaidhi regulations as they should be. And so, but Lord Jagannath was appreciating their service because they were on the platform of Raghunuga. And so Lord Jagannath got upset with Ramanujacharya and threw him out of Jagannath Puri, and he threw him to Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra is a place we also visited where Lord Kurma, the tortoise incarnation of the Lord, is worshipped. You remember going there? That's where they received us very nicely, gave me a little turban, and very, very nice devotees there in Kurma Kshetra. So, first he thought that Lord Kurma was Lord Shiva, so he began to fast, and when he understood it was an incarnation of Krishna, then he became very happy. So, Ramanujacharya also wrote, as we mentioned before, the Sri Bhasha, commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Later on, another story occurred that the king of Chola was a Shiva worshipper, and he wanted everyone in his kingdom to worship Shiva, and he threatened Ramanujacharya that you should start worshipping Shiva and give up this worship of Vishnu. So he called for Ramanujacharya to his courthouse to sort of punish him if Ramanujacharya didn't go along with his order. And so Ramanujacharya sent his disciple Quraysh, remember the one with the photographic memory? He sent his disciple Quraysh, dressed up as him, to the king. And Quraysh replied to the king when the king said, you should worship Lord Shiva. Quraysh said, no, we'll worship Vishnu. Yeah, Shiva is one of the demigods. We're not interested in demigod worship. So the king, when he became heard this, he became so angry, he blinded Quraysh. He took his eyes out. He poked his eyes out. Hellish, isn't it? But the king later on died from that offense. He became known as Krimi Kanta, which means he has a worm throat. So he developed like a cancer in the throat and died because of the offense of Quraysh. Later on, Ramanujacharya told Quraysh to go before the deity Varadaraja and ask for his eyes back. And so Quraysh went before the deity, and instead of asking for his eyes back, he asked that the king be forgiven. And Ramanujacharya said, did you ask for your eyes back? And Quraysh said, no, I asked that the king be forgiven. You can imagine the great mercy of a Vaishnava. That's a symptom of a Vaishnava, that he's forgiving. A demoniac symptom, or at least a motive passion symptom, is that you have enemies, you hate people, you want to get even, you want to see them suffer, right? Become happy to see people suffer. That's demoniac. But a Vaishnava, he always forgives. A Jata Shatrava, he has no enemies. So Ramanujacharya instructed Quraysh, you go back and you understand your eyes belong to me. You're meant to serve me. So ask for your eyes back. So he went back a second time before this deity, Varadaraja, and he fainted after he prayed to the deity. He woke up and his eyes were there again. Nice story, isn't it? So Ramanujacharya defeated many people with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. One time he was arguing with 1,000 Jains, people of the Jain religion, and they all committed suicide when they were defeated by Ramanujacharya. They were so upset, because he was such an erudite scholar. And there's several famous stories. One story is about his disciple Dhanardas. One time Ramanujacharya, they were having a Rath Yatra somewhere. And at this Rath Yatra ceremony, or close to the Rath Yatra ceremony on the beach, there was this gentleman who was with his girlfriend. His name was Dhanardas. And he was actually, instead of fanning the deities, you know, Rath Yatra, you fan the deities with a chamara. So he was fanning his girlfriend with a chamara and holding an umbrella over her head. Can you imagine that? You've seen someone do that. Instead of like Lord Jagannath, he was doing that to his girlfriend. And Ramanujacharya said to his disciples, who were laughing, his disciples were laughing at this guy. He said, "There's a look at that jerk. He's worshiping his girlfriend." And Ramanujacharya told his disciples, just be quiet. Tell him to come here. So they asked for this person to come here. And he said to him, why are you doing this? And this person, his name was Dhanardas, later on he became Dhanardas, he said, because she has such beautiful eyes, gorgeous eyes, I can't keep my eyes off of her. This is like a song, you know. Can't keep my eyes off of you. Like a text message. Can't keep my eyes off you. Me too. So anyway, so what happened is that Ramanujacharya told him, if I can show you someone with more beautiful eyes, will you be happy? Will you like that? Will you worship that person? And Dhanadas said, yeah, sure. So that night, they went to see the deities. And he looked at the deity and saw, you know, Sri Rangam, Lord Ranganath. And he saw the deity's eyes and said, wow, much better than my girlfriend's. And so at that point, he became a disciple of Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya had him get married to his girlfriend. And he and his wife at that point were living together. But the other disciples were criticizing this Dhanadas. They said, yeah, he's so attached. He and his wife, they have all this jewelry and everything like that. Ah, you're such materialists. So Ramanujacharya said, all right, we'll show you how devoted they are. You go to their house when Dhanadas is speaking to me, and you steal his wife's jewelry. So the wife of Dhanadas was sleeping. So the disciples of Ramanujacharya went in a way stealthily, quietly, went up to Dhanadas's wife and took off her jewelry. And then she turned on the other side. You know, when you're sleeping, you turn to the other side. They ran away because they got frightened. They thought she was waking up. I don't know how she slept. She didn't sleep, actually. But so what she had intended was that they would take the other side. She really wanted them to take all the jewelry. So Dhanadas got home, and he said to his wife, why do you only have jewelry on one half of your body? Looked a little weird. And she said, because they stole from me, and then I turned the other side. And Dhanadas said, why did you disturb me? You should have let them take all the jewelry. And the disciples were watching through the window to see Dhanadas's in response when he heard this from his wife. And they came back and they told Ramanujacharya this, and Ramanujacharya said, see, they're much more advanced and renounced than you, because they have all this wealth but they're not attached to it because they want to give it to Krishna. So that's a very interesting story. So then he had a dream. Lord Jagannath sent him to Navadvip. This is an interesting story. This is told by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he saw Lord Chaitanya in his dream. And Lord Chaitanya told him, you should only preach Dasharas. Don't preach any more than that. Dasharas means the servitude. And later on, when I come, you will assist me. Later on, you will appear. Later on, you will appear as Lord Nityananda. You understand? And assist me in this. Of course, Lord Nityananda is Balaram. Balaram, in one sense, is the same as Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya is the same as Lakshman, right? So then, when he got ready to leave this world, he told his disciples that he had 3 more days, and he gave the final instructions before he left this world. Here are his final instructions. 1 is to serve the Vaishnavas always. 2, to have faith in the Vedas and devotees. And 3, to conquer lust, anger, and greed. And 4, to always worship Narayan. And he left this world with his head on the lap of Govinda, his cousin, who he initiated. And he left his body in Sri Rangam, and also there left deities of himself there. So if you go to Sri Rangam today, you can actually see the transcendental body of Sripad Ramanujacharya, because they've preserved his body, they've wrapped his body. And he's sitting up there with his danda. You've seen that? Remember that? It's in part of the temple, one of the alcoves of the temple. That means one of the altars of the temple. The Ramanujacharya is sitting there. There's a little deity of himself in front of his transcendental body. So you can actually see his size and the shape of his body. And the nails, I think, the nails and the hair are still growing to a certain extent. So that is Sripad Ramanujacharya. And also, one other point about Sripad Ramanujacharya, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur took instructions from the followers of Sripad Ramanujacharya as far as sannyas is concerned. Because in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, it's very interesting, the tradition of sannyas was not Tridandi sannyas in the modern age. It was like the Babaji order of sannyas. When you see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or you see the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they had the very short dhotis, very, very short white dhotis. It was like Babaji's. That was the tradition. But then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted Tree Dandi sannyasis. That means people who would preach all over, travel and preach all over the world. And in order to do that, he had to study the history and the heritage of Tree Dandi sannyas that was extant, that was present within the Ramanuja Sampradaya. So he went to South India to study that. And then he took Tree Dandi sannyas. So you see, in our line of disciplic succession, at least in the modern day, he is the first Tree Dandi sannyasi. I mean, at least the sannyasi who dressed in the long saffron robes. Lord Chaitanya had a danda also, but Lord Chaitanya didn't have saffron cloth when he took sannyas. It was white. Does everyone understand that? So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur associated and appreciated the followers of Sripad Ramanujacharya. So any questions or comments? We got about 2 more minutes before class ends. About Sripad Ramanujacharya? Questions, comments, problems? No? Everyone's so quiet here. Yes, Rukmini.
This past time, Ramanujacharya basically just reminds us the nature and the quality of the devotee in that he is part of the Prabhupada. Compassionate, who is willing to spread Krishna consciousness and help people by giving them Krishna happiness.
Yeah, especially that he was willing to go to hell to disobey the order of his spiritual master so he could liberate people. That's interesting, isn't it? And of course you see like other devotees like Vasudev Dutt, they have that same mentality too. That they, Vasudev Dutt, the follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, prayed to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he would take everyone's sins. And he was willing to go to hell and stay in hell, practically speaking, forever, so that everyone can become liberated. So this is we say vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhu. Kripa sindhu means like an ocean or an unlimited amount of compassion or mercy. So Srila Prabhupada manifested that too. He left Vrindavan, which is for someone on Srila Prabhupada's level, it's just perfect realization of the spiritual world, association with Krishna, being in Krishna's abode. But he left Vrindavan to come to America. I mean, I know, you know, in Fiji, if you say you can come to America, everyone will say, Jai, right? Isn't it? They want to go, emigrate to America, or at least New Zealand or Australia, and say, wow, it's like a dream come true. But for someone like Prabhupada, it was entering into the depths of depravity, you know, that like going into some like horrible bar or something, like even worse than that. This is like one time a devotee here invited me to visit a nightclub, so just to see what it was like. And I just opened the doors and I said, ah! Get me out of here. I couldn't even enter into it. It was so... So Prabhupada, for someone coming from Vrindavan, that's how Prabhupada perceived America. You know, people walking around without clothes on, everyone smoking the marijuana, taking drugs, dirty, eating meat, cow flesh. I mean, and then Prabhupada had to live with people who had dog food or cat food in their house. I mean, remember, for someone in Prabhupada's stature, that's considered abominable. You know, we can't relate to that, but Prabhupada, it was like that with Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was willing, basically, to even leave Vrindavan. And when Prabhupada was in his final days, of course, Prabhupada did leave his body in Vrindavan, but in the final days, Prabhupada wanted to continue preaching and traveling all over the world. And Prabhupada said, I'd like to leave my body like a kshatriya, like a fighter, fighting for Krishna, like Arjuna. And Prabhupada said, we want fighters in Krishna consciousness. Not people who fight with each other. You know, that we don't want. But we want fighters like Arjuna, Prabhupada said. Not sit-down people. That's a comment Prabhupada made in his final days. We don't want people to just sit down and chant. But we want people who fight to spread Krishna consciousness. So this movement, Prabhupada instilled that in us, that spirit, adventurous spirit. And we mentioned last night, that's why Prabhupada came to America, because Prabhupada understood the Americans already had that mentality to a certain extent, exploring and adventure and things like that. So he took advantage of that mentality and instilled in us to do adventures for Krishna. And we had many adventures. We went to countries. I went to countries where people were still shrinking heads. You understand? Headhunters. Where you could go to the marketplace and buy a shrunken human head. Worse than Fiji. At least they ate the people here. So we went to places where, and I didn't even go to the most dangerous places. You had people like Bhaktatirtha Maharaj going to the communist countries and basically jumping from one train to another to avoid detection from the KGB. KGB was the secret service in Russia. And so, or people jumping out of windows, when the police would come, he was having